If you have a child with type 1 diabetes, whether they were diagnosed 5 days ago or 5 years ago, you continue to have questions. These are the questions about the emotional side of living with diabetes, the questions about how to parent diabetes. I'm Joanne Robb, a psychotherapist and fellow T1D mom, and I've been parenting diabetes for almost 15 years. In this podcast, I'm here to answer your questions about the emotional and relational challenges that come with being a caregiver for a child with type 1 diabetes. Before we dive in, I have to remind you that I'm not a doctor and nothing that I offer here should be considered medical advice. If you want to make any changes to the way you or your child is managing their type 1, please be sure to check in with your doctor or medical team. Let's get started. Hi, and welcome.
Hi, thank you.
Tell me a little about your child, who you're calling about, and you know how old they are now, how old they were when they were diagnosed, and let's hear how I can help you.
Thanks. My name is Amy, and my daughter is Katie, and she just turned 12 years old. She was diagnosed in September, so we're coming up on just about 2 months being diagnosed with T1D. Mm-hmm. And pretty fresh still.
Yeah, pretty fresh, absolutely. And in the trenches in a big way, right? Like, so you're really at the beginning of this journey and it's very, very hard. I just want to start by naming that because I think it's so real for whatever you're bringing in.
Absolutely. We've definitely felt overwhelmed, just flooded with all the emotions and trying to navigate what the next right step is when there's so many pieces to this puzzle of T1D.
Yeah, that's a beautiful way to say it. It's so true. One of the things I say is the first year is like drinking from a fire hose, right? Because there's just so much to learn, right? And I like how you named that you're navigating the emotions, right? It's not just navigating what to do with this food and how to bolus for this meal, but it's navigating how it feels to be sunk into this place that none of you were anticipating or wanted.
Exactly. And then added a 12-year-old and all the emotions and hormones and having a daughter who is pretty sensitive and nurturing and in tune with her feelings. So like, it feels like all of the emotions are at the forefront and challenging and moving forward with all of the complex things that we now need to do in our day.
It sounds like it's hit her really hard too.
Yeah.
How can I be of help, Amy? Is there a question? Are there some questions? Like, what do you think would be helpful?
I would like to ask about the grief piece that seems to be just lingering and unending. For sure, sometimes it comes out like anger. And for example, on Saturday morning, you know, Katie like rolls out of bed super late because the night before, you know, we've been checking blood sugar into the night because she's had her first like dropping pretty low. And so now she's really anxious about going low in the night, which means not going to bed until like 2 a.m., sleeping in later, and then waking up, refusing to have a meal because she doesn't want to take a shot. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to like navigate. Now she's getting low blood sugar because she's gone for hours without eating. She's hungry. Now she's hangry. She has low blood sugar, but she doesn't want to take a shot. Mm-hmm. And she's emotional about it. Like, best strategies for managing that kind of in the moment, because I don't want to push her, but at the same time, we got to get moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Is this happening on school days too? Or is it only happening on days where she's sleeping late and she's like a weekend day?
It's on school days too.
Uh-huh. So she's not getting to school on time?
Well, we've transitioned to homeschool right now. She hasn't returned to her regular school yet. We have all of her curriculum and we're trying to navigate doing the work on a different schedule. So she hasn't made it back to school yet.
Mm-hmm. And what grade is she in?
She's in sixth grade.
Mm-hmm. What kind of community support is there for you? Is there any there where you are?
There's a lot of support. We've had the school nurse reach out because her son was diagnosed with T1D when he was in sixth grade. At that very same school. So like the school nurse came to our house, chatted with us. She's been amazing. So the school's been fantastic. Our local church has been fantastic, but we're a little bit new to the area. We moved here in January. And so we've been trying to establish a friendship base and that kind of thing. So that's been a little tricky. Mm-hmm. But even so, it's been difficult for Katie. She's pretty private. Like, she doesn't want to do her shots in a public area, especially not in a restroom. So it's been challenging to try and go somewhere and think about, like, the only place where we can give her injections would be, like, she's comfortable in the car, but not like a restroom or anything like that. She's very conscientious. She wants to get everything right with her insulin and stuff, but, like, she's private. She's very embarrassed about everything right now, as for her age, it's appropriate in some regards. She wants to fit in, and all of this makes her stand out. And even just the talking about it too, she's like, it seems like we're always talking about diabetes. And I think, you know, she's just a little burnt out as well.
It sounds so hard, Amy, right? This is a really hard picture. And I think your first step needs to be to normalize this as much as possible. She needs to get back to school, because the message that needs to be communicated to her is, you can have a normal life with this. Of course, it derailed us, this diagnosis, but you get to have a normal life, and we're going to get you back on track. Because the most important thing is for you to figure out how, for us all to figure out how you're going to live your normal life with this thing, even though there are going to be some missteps along the way. Right? Because having her at home is not doing her any favors. What you are communicating by doing that is, this is too much and too big, and it can't be done. And I get the, you know, when my son was diagnosed, I remember keeping him home for a week, watching every single bite that went into his mouth, right? It took a while, and then putting him back in school. Because you have such a supportive school nurse who has so much experience, like, what a gift. You know, she can be safe there. So it's going to be more about her managing the emotional piece so that she can get back there. Does that feel correct? Like, I'm hitting that right?
Partially. I think the complex thing is that the school nurse isn't always there. It's a smaller school. And so, like, she's not there 24/7. So we did try to have her go back to school initially, and my husband was driving. It's about a 25-minute commute to, you know, give her insulin for lunch breaks. And Katie wasn't drinking her water at all during the school day. So, I mean, it's doable. We can get there within 25 minutes, but the school nurse isn't there full time. So that makes it a little tricky.
So can she give herself injections?
She can. I don't know that she would be at a point where she'd be quite ready to do that with the carb counting, because we all, somebody always double checks for the carb counting.
But is she, does she have a phone?
She does. She has her phone. I think there's an issue with cell service at the school. So she was able to take her phone, but she had no cell service. So that's the concern.
That's hard. Yeah. We could get mired in a bunch of details. And I know that you can figure this out, right? Like, that you can partner with the office, and she can go to the office and call you from there and say that, this, you know, or you can pack her a lunch with all the carb counts on it. And just, you know, maybe she has texting service, even though there's not cell. Like, sometimes a text can zip through. I think the issue is, for all of you, the adjustment, the idea of, like, where is the line here between what she wants and what the reality is? So there was a time I volunteered at our local diabetes camp, and I was giving a talk, and I don't remember why it came up, but the head doctor at camp was asked a question during my talk about checking blood sugars, like doing a finger stick. And she said, your diabetes children need to be willing to do a finger stick at any time, which means that our children don't have consent always, which is a real parenting shift for many of us, because we have this idea that we're going to ask our children's permission for everything, and we're going to get their 100% buy-in for everything. Your daughter doesn't want to this job, and she's saying, I can't do it, I can't do it. And you're really going to have to push her to get her on board. And I'm saying that with love, right? It's not like you're going to push her in an angry way or in an aggressive way, but you're going to be saying to her, the goal is for you to go to school, and the goal is for you to dose for yourself. And we're going to partner with someone else at school. Like, it's not going to be the school nurse. It's going to be the secretary. It's going to be somebody else. And this can't be private to the adults. The adults have to know. It can be private to the kids. That's up to you. That's your choice. But the adults have to know and have to keep you safe. Right. So you're kind of, I can sense that you're going to be violating some of the things she wants, right? She'd prefer no one to know. And that's not one of the options here. And it's not one of the options here for her to not go to school. And it's not one of the options for her to keep her shots totally private. Like, she might need to be with another adult who's not you or your husband to do right. that. That's a really big lift for a kid who's been, my sense is, given a lot of permission to say what she wants, which is great. We want to hear from our children. But if mm-hmm. she had leukemia, you wouldn't be asking, do she want this port put in and these drugs? She would just mm-hmm. need them. It would not be optional. I think that's where you are. And so because of that, you need to take it as, you need to shift your parenting stance is what I'm thinking. And I'm going to mm-hmm. pause because that's a big lift that I'm handing you. And I wonder how it lands.
Yeah, that's a lot. I think it would make things so much easier for sure, because it's exhausting having her here just because we're trying to move her forward. But it's like, are we making any progress?
So, you mean academically? Or in terms of
academically, emotionally, it feels like we're at a stuck point on some levels. We did have some days where it felt like she was like, this is getting easier. The shots aren't hurting as bad. And then, I don't know, that was maybe 3 days. And then we went right back to all of the emotions with it. And the shots are hurting and I don't want to take them. So
the shots do hurt. They're not going to not hurt. I mean, that's part of what we as parents need to tolerate. And the answer isn't, oh my God, it hurts. Let's not. The answer is, mm-hmm. I know it hurts, sweetie. It's hard. What can we do to help you now that it's over? Like, you kind of actually, as parents, I think what we signal to our children is it hurts and we're going to ignore it, which feels terrible. That's not how we normally parent things, right? We normally pay attention when things hurt. But in this case, it's going to hurt. And we need to communicate to them in some way that there's a normalness to this. So it's not like we totally ignore it. We're like, oh yeah, it does. And let's move on.
Yeah, that's really hard for me.
So what happens for you? Yeah, what happens for you?
We're running on fumes because we're exhausted. Mm-hmm. So like, we don't have the resources to be like always on point with it. Mm-hmm. But I am the sensitive one as well. Like, I've transitioned to giving a lot of her shots in her arms and her legs. A lot of times she'll do her legs, but it's awful to hurt her and see her suffer. So mm-hmm. that's a component that's like ongoing, like is a lot of suffering. Mm-hmm.
It is a lot of suffering. And I think that we need to be practical about the suffering. It sounds terrible in a lot of ways, but leaning into the suffering too much is not going to help her learn to tolerate the suffering. And she has to, she just doesn't have a choice, because otherwise her life will come unraveled. And that's just not what you want for her. What you want for mm-hmm. her is for her life to be as intact as it can be. Mm-hmm. There's got to be something in here where you shift something about your parenting instead of being so empathically related to it, to get a little more practical in it so mm-hmm. that you can model for her how she needs to relate to this.
Right. Absolutely.
When your child is first diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, it feels like you've been thrown into the deep end of the pool. It starts as an unwelcome surprise and then morphs into a lot of unwanted but critically important work that can leave you feeling hopeless and overwhelmed. If your child was diagnosed within the last year, Sweet Talk's After Diagnosis coaching course was designed with you in mind. In After Diagnosis, you'll get a more hopeful perspective on what diabetes will mean for your child's future and for you. To learn more, go to www.diabetessweettalk.courses.
The other thing I would say, Amy, is I wonder about finding her a mentor. So if the local high school has a T1D kid who's mm-hmm. willing to partner with her and show her how normal it is, how she can do it, how the kid, whoever you find, is out with it, I'm putting that in quotes, that would be a great person for her to be connected to.
I have an option for that. There's someone at my other daughter's dance class who mother reached out to me, and her daughter's T1D. And I think I'm just going to have to like force the meetup because Katie hasn't been willing to quite yet.
Right. So again, I wouldn't give her choices. She doesn't know what she needs. It's like your toddler. You don't give your toddler a choice whether or not they're going to take a nap. You know, they need a nap. They're saying, I'm not tired. I don't want to go to bed. And you're like, oh, sweetie, you're exhausted. I mean, I remember with my daughter, my T1D daughter, when she was 2, I used to literally hold her down. I'd nap alongside her because if I didn't hold her in place, she would not fall asleep. There's no child that's going to ask for those things, right? And this poor child of yours doesn't know what she needs. So don't ask. Just say, we're having these people over for lunch. You know, make it easy for her. Don't drag her somewhere. do the heavy lift, buy the takeout food or do it yourself, right? But make it easy for her so that she's just, it's just normalized.
Yeah.
How does all this feel? This is a lot I'm asking of you. I'm asking a big shift of you, or I'm suggesting, I'm not asking, I'm suggesting a big shift for you. How does it feel?
It feels like the right direction for sure, because I've just watched my other daughter grow and we've wanted the same thing for Katie. This is a great school. There's great people there who are supportive and I know that she'll do great there. So it's kind of surprising that I've been stuck in allowing her to transition so long and not pushed her or set a date. I think we've kind of said a date, let's go back in January. But if this isn't helpful for her, it doesn't make sense for us to keep waiting for something to change. Or I think the longer we wait, the harder it's going to get for her to return.
I think so too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I really do think so. And also, I like the way you just said that, like you're waiting for something to shift. Nothing's going to shift. Right. She's anxious and she needs to learn that she can do these things. Right.
Right.
There's actually a book I might recommend to you. It's called Anxious Kids, Anxious Parents by Reid Wilson, R-E-I-D Wilson. And there are a lot of very practical languaging and tools in that book. And that might be helpful. And I haven't read it for a while, but what I remember is it talked about ways that you partner with your child. So it's really transparent. Like, here's what we're going to do. And here's why your anxiety is getting in the way, right? Like really naming the anxiety as another, almost like another person, right? So that you can be essentially addressing that other person enough to talk back to it. And she needs some help talking back to her anxiety. I might take a look at that book. It might be helpful.
Sounds good. Yeah, definitely. Anxiety is ruling the nest right now.
Yeah. And that makes sense.
Sugar. Yeah. Anxious about, she has an upcoming blood draw. And I don't know, that's where I'm like, I wish she would have had more information about why she has this upcoming blood draw. And it's building those relationships with her endocrinology team so that we can get more information and be better informed. But overall, definitely the anxiety component has just flooded us for sure.
Is she, are you thinking about getting her on either a CGM or a pump?
Yes. And we're scheduled to take a pump it up class on November 28th. So that's something that she's told me, I will never wear that. Mm-hmm. And I'm just moving forward with the class. And she's going to have her go with me just so that she can see how it works. She's wearing a Dexcom right now. And the first two trials of a Dexcom went really bad. So like she's on a third one now, but it seems to be going well. So we're making progress. It's just slow.
That's great. I want to name Amy. It's not that slow. You're 2 months in and this all feels like inside of normal. Unfortunately, I think the part that I feel like I said, I really want to have you get her back to school. Cause that for me, I've seen it as a therapist is a slippery slope, but everything else you're experiencing is so normal. Right. And yay that she's on a CGM and it's working, because that means you can all go to sleep at night and you can just set your alarms to wake up and you can reassure her that you are watching that Dexcom readout and she can go to bed. Right.
Right. Well, I feel like that's where our anxiety gets in the way, because we haven't been very trusting of it because we're not so comfortable with it yet. Mm-hmm. She hasn't even reached her 10 day on the Dexcom. And of course, it's been like 30 points off. And so we're not so comfortable with it yet. Mm-hmm. So again, it's that anxiety component that we're not very trusting. So she can sense that. And we don't have a routine down yet for nighttime.
Mm-hmm. So 30 points off in what way?
On her numbers, where she compares the finger stick, finger prick to the CGM.
But when she's very low or when just all the time?
No, it's been sporadic. For the majority, it's within that 20% range. But there have been times like after lunch where it's been about 30 points difference.
So I'm going to suggest you stop pricking her finger. Just stop. She's on a Dexcom. It's fine. 30 points difference after lunch makes zero difference in your management. Zero difference in your management.
Okay.
The only time, I'm going a little bit into medical territory here, so I want to be careful, but check with your endo to see if they agree, right?
Okay.
Because to me, the time's
the point.
Right. If you're not changing what you're going to do, then I wouldn't poke her. Mm-hmm. The times it seems to me that it's important to do a finger stick is if she's low, right? To double check. And if you're nervous that the CGM might be a little bit off, then just set your low alarm higher at night.
Yeah. Right. That makes sense.
She doesn't need to get poked. You can trust that it's close enough and that 30 points honestly doesn't make a bloody bit of difference unless she's low. Right. Okay, 150 to 180 after lunch when you're not going to dose her anyway, it just doesn't make enough of a difference to add the anxiety in that comes from checking and feeling like, oh, it's off. Now, if she's 60 and it's reading 90, that's a problem.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But if you have your low alarm at 90 and you do a finger prick, then you don't. Right. And also, let me just say, none of these things have to be an emergency. If she's 60, you just add some carbs, you just put in juice.
Right. I think that's the part that we're like so anxious about. Like, what? It's like the sky is falling when she gets to 60 and we haven't navigated that well.
So part of this is, so on my website, if you go to my website, which is diabetessweettalk.com, you can find a self-care kit. And in that self-care kit, there's some information on what to do when your child is low and what to do when your child is high, with some meditations. Obviously, if she's low, you have to feed her carbs and do that. But there's a meditation that you can do that might help you soothe yourself so that you don't feel so panicked.
Mm-hmm. But not something she needs to be staying up every night for.
No.
I think freaking, that's the current routine and it's really bad.
No, she needs to go to bed and you've got it and you'll set the low alarm higher so you'll catch it. And if she's low, you'll go in with a juice box and a straw and see if she can just stay asleep and drink her juice through her sleep. My kids, one could and one couldn't, right? But you try, you let her sleep, you tell her that you have got it. Because she needs to know that there's a big fat safety net there, because right now she's too panicked, right? And so to say, we've got it. You can even say, I talked to this therapist who specializes in type one today, and here's what she suggested. I've got it. You need to go to sleep, sweetheart. I've got it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. How does that feel?
It feels good. I need to be stronger in that though. And I've already moved towards, like, with the shots, I have to be more authoritative because they have to be done.
Yes.
It's an adjustment to being more, like this has to be done. And
And if you haven't been parenting like that, it's really hard shift. Absolutely.
Right.
And really a big lift for you.
For sure.
Yeah. So that's a big question. How does this feel at the end of this, like this big question about making this adjustment and this parenting shift? I just want to make sure that you're not feeling too rattled.
No, I think in the back of my mind, I've known that like this needs to be done and it's just going to be better for everyone, especially her, to get back to some normalcy and to get back with her friends and not let diabetes be like running the show here, and everything that her day is about, she's missing out and she needs to get back.
Yeah. Good for you for knowing that. That's great.
Yeah.
Amy, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I encourage you to let me know what happens. I always love to know how it worked out, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. You've got questions? I've got answers. If you want to get some help with the emotional and parenting challenges you're facing with navigating diabetes management for your kid, go to www.diabetessweettalk.com and click on the banner at the top of the page to register for a live recording session. I'm looking forward to helping you with whatever your diabetes challenge is. Thanks again for listening today. If you want answers to your questions about parenting a kid with type 1, I'd like to invite you to join our live recording sessions so you can ask your questions in person. Not only will you get the support you need and deserve, but through the podcast, you'll be helping other T1D parents to know that they're not alone with the challenges they're facing. To join one of my live recording sessions, simply go to www.diabetessweettalk.com and click the banner at the top of the page to register. Again, go to www.diabetessweettalk.com and click the banner at the top of the page to register.